We're so glad that you've joined us today on the Relevant Church podcast. There's so much God wants to do in and through you as you listen to this message. If you want to learn more about Relevant Church, visit us online at thisisrelevant.cc.
I'm so blessed to be here with you today. When I called Muta and said I'm coming out here, my mom lives in Saginaw, Michigan. She's suffering from dementia. We came up and with my daughter and my wife, we went and visited her. And then I said, Mom, I'll be down in your neck of the woods on the 9th. And he said, good, I need a preacher. And I said, great. What are you preaching on? He said, Ford stories. I said, even better. What is it? He said, we're going through Bible stories as if we were telling them in a fort. Now, growing up, me and my friends and my older brother and my younger brother, we built some forts. We didn't build the cheesy forts that most guys did, just so sheet over the kitchen table, so it was like nice and sturdy and everything. No, my mom crocheted Afghans. And our chairs had those knobs at the top of them. So we take the holes of the Afghan and we put them in the chairs and then we build our fort like that. And one guy would pull it and all the chairs would hit you. And it was bad. You know, we had to learn the hard way on how to build a fort. But the cool thing about the fort was we got to tell stories. We got to tell stories about everything, what was going on in our lives. Me and my brother and my friends, we like to talk about sports. I'm a big sports fan. Fantasy football. I was born in Buffalo, New York. Moved out to California. Now I'm in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. But so I grew up as a Buffalo Bills fan and a Buffalo Sabres fan. That's their hockey team. And I was a New York Yankees fan. And I was also, I was always a Laker fan. I didn't like any of them. Come on. I did that for Jessica. I also wore this for Jessica, too. But we always tried to one-up each other. You know, like we would go to the games and somebody would get an autograph card. They'd be like, hey, I got so-and-so's autograph and blah, blah, blah. And I always kept this one story, one fort story in the back of my head. And I just waited till everybody got all their big stories out. I got one to top everything. So as I said, I was a big Yankee fan, and my dad got a job in Southern California selling printing. That was before laser printers and everybody could do it on their own. Now they don't sell printing. Anyway, his boss had Angel tickets, 11 rows up from first base. Like, it's there. You could reach out and touch someone. I mean, they're primo. But in the old Angel Stadium, the visiting team came up the right field line. So they would come right past first base, and the dugout was on the first base side. So my dad says, we got Yankee tickets. And I'm like, yes. So Yankee hat on, program in hand, pen. I'm going to get somebody's autograph. So here comes the Yankees coming down the line. So I go to the rail, and I'm yelling out, Mr. Chambliss, Chris Chambliss. Hey, can I get an autograph? Reggie Jackson, Reggie, can I get Mr. Home Run, Mr. October, can I get home? Every Yankee passed me by. And I didn't say a word. It was like I was invisible. And in that moment, my faith in celebrities, my dad's boss paid good money for me to be there. At least they could have acknowledged me. So little did I know is, the Angel first baseman of that day was Rod Carew. I'm really dating myself. You're like, Rod who? So Rod Carew saw this whole thing going on. And he's throwing infield grounders to his guys. He takes one of the balls and he walks up to the rail. And he says, don't worry about it, kids. They're just Yankees. And I saw a Yankee hat somewhere. I hope he's not in here. Because in that moment, like that whole game, I was rooting for the Angels. I became an instant Angel fan. And in one moment, my faith in celebrities and baseball players was crushed. And in the very next moment, it was all restored. So now I'm an Angel fan. And I love it. But that single moment changed the way I viewed my teams. See, and sometimes we need to have an encounter with Jesus where he sees opportunities and he sees devastation and disappointment and discouragement, and he brings you that ball and he says, don't worry, kid, I got you. And your faith in Jesus and your faith in God is restored in a single moment. So we tell Ford stories. And because it was happenstance that I was the first guy, we were just talking and he's like, so do you want to do this? I said, yeah. I go, what stories have been taken? He goes, none. You get first shot. He said, great. Then nobody can take my story. Because I love the story of Abraham and Isaac. I love this story of faith. I hope that there's an Afghan and some chairs in heaven, and I can go in the fort with Abraham and just go, hey, I read in Genesis 17 and Genesis 22 how this thing all played out. But were you really that bold in faith, or were you scared to death? Because it doesn't say it, but I'd really love to hear your take on it. But it's an inspiring story, and we're going to be in Genesis 22. We have the slides for 17, but you're going to have to be in Genesis 22 with me today. So turn there. While you're turning there, I'm going to read Genesis chapter 17 because it kind of sets the story. So in chapter 17, verse 15, it says, and God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give her a son, and I will bless her, and she will become nations. Kings of people shall come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face, laughed, and said to himself, shall a child be born of a man who's 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who's 99 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard you, and behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him fruitful and multiply him greatly. He shall father 12 princes, and I will make him into a great nation. But I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you this time next year. When he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abraham. Okay, let's back this up a little bit. At age 90 and 100, so she will give birth at age 91 and he will be 101, God promises Abraham a son. Now, he's 100 years old. No kids, some kids in the room, but I'm guessing that Abraham hasn't gotten any in 40 years or so. I mean, he's 100, you know? I mean, I just hope to be upright, let alone fertile at 100 years old. You know, I mean, let's just be real about it. And Sarah, but what's interesting about it, his wife's name is Sarai, but even when he laughed at God, he still called Sarah, Sarah, and not Sarai. So he was already in obedience to God because he said, your wife's no longer Sarai, it's Sarah. And even as he mocked God and laughed at him, he was in obedience to what he wanted his wife to be called. So, but it's laughable to Abraham that this could happen. But how often does God call us to something and we laugh at it? How often does God say, I have something for you to do? And it could be something small, or it could be something medium, or it could be something large. But because of our lack of value in it ourselves, or our lack of faith in our abilities, we laugh at God and go, there is no way you could do that thing through me. And we see that what he did in Isaac was an everlasting covenant. You have to keep that in your head. And if you look at the genealogy in Matthew 1, the genealogy of Jesus starts with Abraham and Isaac. This is an everlasting covenant. God's going to fulfill the messianic promise through Isaac. I mean, think about that. Isaac is the fuse that leads to the explosion of forgiveness, grace, mercy, and the love of Jesus. You know, and it all starts right here. It all starts right here. So let's fast forward to chapter 22. And it's something interesting that happens in chapter 22. Let's read the first 5 verses. After these things, God tested. Say tested. Because you need to remember that. Abraham, and said to him, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. He said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love. Go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains in which I will tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took 2 of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God told him. On the 3rd day, he lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to the 2 young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come back to you. Let's just stop right there. So this promise, this everlasting covenant that he is going to give in his son Isaac, he says, hey, remember that everlasting covenant and the promise I gave you? Yeah, go kill him. I got two boys and 2 girls. We went girl, boy. But I have 2 boys that I love dearly. There was no covenant that was met through him. But if God came down and said, take your son Joshua and offer him up as a burnt sacrifice to me, I would become again? Seriously? I would question him. I would deny it. I would say, hold on, let me pray about it. I know I'm going to talk to you anyways, but I'm still going to pray about it. You know, I'm going to prolong this situation as long as I can. And a lot of people brought this verse to me and go, see, the Bible contradicts itself. God contradicts himself. God doesn't contradict himself. Because at the very first verse of 22, it says, after these things, God tested. And somebody needs to hear this. God will test you. He'll never tempt you, but he'll test you. But just remember, when the teacher tests you, he will remain silent, but he will not remain absent. Remember when we were in school, I took the SATs, and the teacher would sit up front and they would say, okay, break the seal, open the test, and start on section 1. And then silence until she said, pencils down, section's over. That's it. During the test, I was on my own, but I could still make eye contact with my teacher. Especially my math teacher. I was horrible in math. And I had this one teacher in junior high, Mr. Main, and he just had this, he believed in me, and I sucked at math, if I could be honest. I was just terrible. But when I was taking my math test, I would look up, and me and Mr. Main would make eye contact, and through his eyes, he was like, you got this. And I did. He never said a word, but his presence was still there, even though he was silent. But then I want to just touch on the faith of Abraham. Actually, I'm going to touch on a lot of faith of Abraham. Look how quickly he left. So verse 3, it says, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took the 2 young men with him and his son Isaac. He didn't wait till lunchtime to see if God was going to change his mind. He said, you've given me a task. I'm going to trust you with all the faith that I've got. So I'm going to get up. I'm going to saddle the donkeys. I'm going to gather the people. I'm going to cut the wood for the burnt offering. I'm going to do everything it takes. And I'm leaving tomorrow morning. Man, that's faith. I mean, he just went. How often do we hear from God that, go pray for this person? Or this, and it just dwells in you. I mean, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you guys had a Holy Spirit experience. And when that Holy Spirit says, this person needs encouragement, and you go, but really? Am I the one to encourage them? If we have the faith of Abraham, we go up to him and go, the Lord has told me that you need some encouragement. Don't know what it is. Don't know what you're going through. But God has something for you, and you encourage them through it. So he gets up right away, nonstop. Let's get this going. I wouldn't be so eager to go kill my kid. If I'm being just really honest with you, I'm hitting the snooze like 45 times, going through my morning devotion, see if God has a different word for me, you know. But he leaves without hesitation, which brings me to the first lesson we have today. God isn't so concerned about your ability, but he is more concerned about your availability. Jesus, God said, Abraham, and he said, here I am. Didn't ask him. And then he said, go kill your son. He didn't question anything. He just simply was available. He said, here I am, Lord. What do you have for me? Oh, go kill your son. All right, I'll get the wood together, the donkeys together, and the boys together. We're off tomorrow morning. Really? But yet, somebody says, pay for those, that bread. You know, you feel it in your spirit to pay for the bread and milk for the person behind you. You're like, is this really you, Lord? Money's a little tight. I know you drive on the streets that are made out of gold and can provide for everything that I need. But that's like $8. If they get eggs, it's like 16. Eggs are expensive. I don't know if it's the same here. Eggs are expensive in South Dakota. But he just says, here I am. How different would this world be if we just simply said, here I am? So would we move at the speed of Abraham to do the task that we're taunted to do? What kind of faith does it take to just go? I mean, I've seen faith in this building. I was in this building. Last time I visited this building, there was no stage. There was like duct tape that said this was going to be the stage, and the walls were ugly. But actually, the walls were beautiful because like 3 days before I came, you guys had a party, and you guys just wrote blessings and Bible verses on these walls. See, but we want to know the whole roadmap. See, the destination for Christine and Mutal were, this is where your church will be. That's the end point. When I came here from Saginaw, I put it in my GPS that I want to go to my hotel in Mishawaka. It told me every turn. She even reminded me, in 200 feet, please turn right. You know, I mean, she, because, and then my wife, who hates my driving, will be like, she said, turn right. You know, and I'm like driving back, and she's like, recalculating, you know. So, but we want to know the turns to get to the end result. We don't want to trust God in the process. See, and sometimes God asks us to do the unconventional and the out of the ordinary so he can perform extraordinary. See, we all want it to make sense. You know, I better do this point. Sometimes, it's point number two, at times we have to step out in faith in order to see God respond in faithfulness. See, but that's the thing. We say, okay, God, you've told me to do X. Tell me how it's all going to work, and then I'll step. That's not faith, if I could be so bold. Martin Luther King said, Faith is taking the first step when you can't see the whole staircase. But if you notice, even if you fast forward to the Gospels, when Jesus healed, he said, "Go, your faith has made you well." They had to respond in faithfulness. Go bathe in the pool of Bethesda. Put this mud on your eyes. Lower your friends down. Have your friends lower you down in a house that I'm in, and step out in faith and dig a hole in the roof and drop the guy down. And he said, take up your mat and walk home. See, we want that end result without doing any faith work first. But when we take a small step of faith, God responds in great faithfulness. And Abraham knew that. Let's continue on verse 5. Listen to the way he speaks. Then Abraham said to the young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come back to you." So Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering, and he laid Isaac on it. Let's just stop right there. Listen to how he speaks. Let's review. God said, "I'm going to promise you a son." He's going to be the start of the messianic promise. Check. Go kill him. But yet here, he knows the end result. But what does he say to the guys? "Hey, I and the boy are going to go over there and worship. We'll be right back." He didn't say, "I and the boy are going to go over there and worship and I'll be back." See, we gloss over that, and sometimes some of the biggest gems that the Bible will give you are in the smallest verses. He was confident, not in that his son was going to not die. I think Abraham really knew that if he plunges that knife into his son's chest and burns him to death, that God is going to provide his son again. So it doesn't matter. He just knows he's coming back with his kid. So he takes all this stuff and he grabs the knife and he grabs the son and he's walking up this hill, and Isaac says to his father in verse 7, "My father." And again, Abraham says, "I am here, my son. Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham says, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering." So they went up, both of them together. Even the way he talks to his son, he knows his son is the offering. He could have easily said, "You're it." But his faith in God and the promises that he has given him, he said, "God will provide for himself an offering." I don't know how, I don't know when, and I don't know where, but God's going to do it because I'm standing on the promises of God's word. My 101-year-old wife gave birth. He could sure as heck give me a burnt offering. So when our last point, and then we're going to try to finish up here in a little bit. When God makes a promise, he will keep his word even if we don't know how. That's the key, folks. Even if we don't know how. We want to know how, but we don't know how. Abraham's availability again. He's just there. He's like, "All right, Moriah, we're going to go on the mountain. I lift my eyes. I see the mountain. God says, that's the one. Let's go. Bring the wood, bring the fire, bring the knife, bring the boy. Stay here." So in verse 9, when they came to the place which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there. He laid the wood in order and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Okay. If I'm Abraham, in my sinfulness, I'm like, isn't this good enough? Haven't I stepped in faith enough? I said I would go. I left early in the morning. I brought everything. I built the altar. I tied him up. Isn't this good enough? Have I fulfilled my part of the faithfulness? God says one more step. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. I get emotional because I picture myself with my boy on the altar. He's gonna do it. Abraham is gonna do it. That's a scary moment in my life. I don't want to outlive my children. And Abraham's about to do it, and he's not flinching. But an angel of the Lord called out to him and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." It's his availability again. And I'm guessing that the angel didn't say, "Abraham, Abraham." He probably said, "Abraham, Abraham." Because what if he gets out the first Abraham and the knife plunges and he's like, "Man, you should have talked quicker." That's like your kid crawling on the table. Well, we let our children crawl on the table. And they get to the edge. Oh, they'll be all right. They're resilient. Sometimes God asks us to do what seems illogical. But if we are obedient, we step in faith. And sometimes blind faith. We will see an abundance of blessings as he responds in faithfulness. So then he said, "Don't lay a hand on your boy. Don't do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing that you would not withhold your son, your only son." Spirit just spoke. And he just said, "Sounds familiar, doesn't it?" See, because Abraham was willing to sacrifice his one and only son. I wonder what other father was able to do that. See, but after Jesus was beaten and spit on and laughed and stripped naked and flogged far too many times than he deserved, and they bolted him to a cross. And he hung up there. And what did he say? "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Even in his misery, even in his suffering, he still interceded for us. And unlike Isaac, who had the blessing of it all being stopped, Jesus had to say, my God, why have you forsaken?" See, God had to forsake his one and only son. He had to turn his back and let Jesus bear the sins of the world by himself so you and I didn't have to. Because we wouldn't have been able to do it like he did it. So we could spend eternity with him. So here's the question on the floor. What's your Isaac? Is it your finances? Is that what needs to be laid on the altar and given over to God? Because I tell you, we had some struggles, Cammie and I. We built the house of our dreams in Southern California. After we moved into that house, 3 weeks later, I had a seizure due to migraines. My license was taken away for 6 months. A lot of testing, a lot of medical bills, all while we were trying to get my wife diagnosed because she had chronic pain. They thought it was lupus. It wasn't, blah, blah, blah. And back then, fibromyalgia wasn't deemed a worthy condition. We walked out of doctor's offices because they said it's all in her head. Get up and... Needless to say, I accrued about $27,000 in medical bills. So we declared bankruptcy. We lost the house that we worked so hard to get. We moved into a rental, struggled financially. And so, you know what the best thing for us to do was? Stop tithing. It was a good idea. Things got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. To the point where I said, we've got to do something. And my wife said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to start tithing again. Because the problem with it was, is that my money going out was exceeding my money coming in. The math didn't work. By the way, God's not bound by math. So we start tithing again, and it's not to pat me on the back. I just don't want you guys to fall in the same situation I did. We started tithing, and it's amazing that my income exceeded my outgoing. Math didn't match up. 3 weeks before, it wasn't matching up. We're short like hundreds of dollars. Then I start tithing, and we have an abundance. We have overage of hundreds of dollars. The bills didn't change. The income didn't change. The heart changed. My availability and my finances changed. I just wanted to be available for God, and I wanted to give him the first fruits. So you know what I do now? Thank God technology. Every other Friday, my tithe pulls. Actually, my tithe pulls to this church. I don't see it. We start our budget, we start paying our bills after we see Relevance Tithe come out. And we're never short money. Is it your family that you need to put on that altar? Are you struggling with children that have fallen away from God? Your children are not your children. They belong to Jesus. They're just on loan from him to us.
Thank you again for joining us on the Relevant Church podcast. If this message has been impactful to you, let us know by sending an email to hello@thisisrelevant.cc. If God is impacting your life through this ministry, join us in reaching others by investing at giving.thisisrelevant.cc. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast for more messages like this one.